Hello and welcome to 10 Things I Hate About, an Outlander podcast. We're back with our regular schedule and episode 12, looking at season 5, From the Fiery Cross to Better to Marry Than Burn. If you're listening on your phone, please subscribe to our podcast on whatever your favourite platform is and rate us, give us a review if you have time. We'd really appreciate it. It helps us reach a wider audience and we'll be forever grateful. Thank you and enjoy the episode.
We all have our favourite shows, but there's always something that comes along that means you like it a little less. The technical term is the Scrappy-Doo effect. Two friends create a safe space to talk about their favourite show, Outlander, all the things they love about it and some of the things they hate. Although we all love Outlander, there are things we hate. Admit it, there's always something. So we've created a safe space, a space for all Outlander lovers to share their dark secrets, but mainly it's a space to share ours. Every week, we'll discuss episodes, their themes, feminism, what we love, and every week we'll talk about something we hate. Roger. Yep, we hate him. But let's be clear, we don't hate Rick Rankin. We have a clear grasp on reality. So join us, gentle viewer. Join Sharon and Ruth, two England-based Outlander fans, as they discuss love, hate, and time travel.
We're back. Yes, a new season. Hello, lovely listeners. We've had so much engagement over the last few weeks. It's been so exciting. Yeah.
As I think we've mentioned before, we genuinely thought that only people who have actually know us in the real world would listen. But actual strangers are listening.
It was very exciting. And we had, we've had a couple of engagements with, or a few actually, between emails and DMs. And we thought what would be nice would be to talk about anyone's emails or inquiries or thoughts and feelings about what we're talking about going forward, maybe at the start of the episode. So we would encourage everyone to just say hi, or if you agree with us or disagree with us, Just let us know, and we will chat about it briefly at the start and then move on to kind of like our usual schedule. But we had a really nice email from Cassie from Iowa in the US, who brought up the boots that I have a big bugbear with on Jamie and Claire's wedding night. I'm obsessed with, and why he doesn't take his boots off. And we've talked about it on the podcast, and we've talked about it on Instagram, and it's come up a couple of times with Jamie's boots. But she did make a really good point about that, and she said actually it comes up in the book as well, which as you all know, Ruth and I haven't read all of them. About Claire talks about how underrated male virginity is, and the eagerness with which they proceed with. So she makes a really good point there that Jamie would obviously have been quite eager, and that would have been the last thing on his mind, which is so true.
It is true, but it's still, I mean, it's more, I think, the size of the boots that make it hilarious. But I think Cassie makes a really good point, and it's a brilliant email. Yes, it was very exciting to receive our first email.
So thank you, Cassie, and thank you to everyone else who's sent us messages through. And we will get round to it, and like we say, we'll bring it up at the start of the next episode as well. So if you have any, and if you want to go back on previous episodes, we're happy to kind of revisit those too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the thing that I've really enjoyed is people's takes on things that maybe we haven't thought about or noticed. Some people have sent us really thoughtful, their kind of ideas about stuff, and it's been great. So yeah, thank you so much, Cassie, for taking the time to email us. It was super exciting. I got a very super excited WhatsApp from Sharon saying we got our first email.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear people's perspectives, as well as just the two of us blabbering on about all our thoughts. But yeah, so we're into season five already, which I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed this. I forgot that I really like this out of all of the seasons. This is kind of one of my favorites, and I'd forgotten that. I definitely preferred it to season four. Kind of like a bit more Jamie and Claire heavy than compared to the last season. There's a bit more insight into the two of them, and I think just after the weight of season four, of how heavy that Roger and Bree is, I think like coming into this one, you get that light relief.
I think there's like a bit of a balance swings back to focus on Jamie and Claire, and I think there's quite a lot of foreshadowing with the opening of the season, with showing Murta when he's young and Jamie when he's young, and sort of really establishing their relationship. I think in our notes I referred to it as young sexy Murta. I'm not sure if Duncan LaCroix would appreciate that.
I bet he would.
But I think it's a good like opening to sort of, because obviously the last season ends with that kind of, that he's got to hunt Murta down and kill him. So it's kind of showing why that is so difficult for Jamie, and how long their relationship has been and how important it is for both of them. So I think it's a really good start to the season to kind of really show that is a theme that goes through it all and is really powerful.
Yeah, it was a good way of kind of like emphasizing that and bringing in the root of their relationship, even though we do understand, we've seen them go through so many different scenarios together and some of their hardest times together and kind of joyous, really. But seeing that, embedding that where that started from, I think was a really important part of really opening of that season of this season.
Absolutely.
And then we're into the wedding then pretty quickly.
Yeah. So it's a wedding, I mean, I think there is a lot of good stuff in here, I mean, as much as we would like to just go,
I know.
I think there's a lot of good stuff. I think, showing out how Jamie is being like a proud dad and the things he does. Like, I think it's really lovely how he does the kind of ritualistic things that you need for a wedding, like something blue, something borrowed, that sort of thing. I think that's really nicely done. I like the fact that he is still like, really skeptical of Roger, obviously.
Yes.
We're with him all the way.
And it happens so often in a lot of series where they just kind of like, oh yeah, no, that's forgiven. But Jamie really doesn't let go of that.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, I'm really glad they didn't shy away from that, because it would be so against his character to do that.
Yeah.
So, and some of it's quite humorous, especially because when you see him and Claire kind of like not battling it out, but she's like, Jamie, and he's
trying to get him to be nice.
Yeah, it brings like that extra kind of an additional dynamic to their relationship as well, which is really lovely.
Yeah, I agree.
But, and his just, it was just so lovely to see him like so nervous going down to Bree and all this stuff. And you kind of see that Bree has forgiven him since the last episode we saw, which is a welcome relief. Jamie's skeptical, and us as an audience are still skeptical of Roger. It is how we want to view him, really. But I really liked, it was a really joyous way kind of to open the season, and like all the characters are there as well, which is so nice. Yeah. Like even Lord John like crops up, and some really funny scenes with Fergus and Marcelly at the wedding getting absolutely pissed, and
I think there's some really great like little set pieces, like where they're all doing like the drinking game, doing the tongue twisters and things like that. And just some really nice, like everybody gets their own little bit, which I think works really well.
Really good. Like you can see like the community forming. Yeah. And that's kind of, I mean, that's where they want us to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was, yeah. I really like that dig that Jamie does with when, is it, I never know how to say, but yeah, it was really good having them. And then they're all just kind of like getting on with it. But the first, that first sex scene with Claire and Jamie is really funny.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely played for comedy. And I think if memory serves, we have a return to the boots.
Yeah. He's trying to get his boots off whilst being really silent so that they don't wake the baby.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good opening episode.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Being really determined about what, like, almost like creating his clan.
Yes.
So to speak, and something that he really holds dear, we know he holds dear, when he like gets everyone to pledge to him, like we saw with Colm and back in Casa Leoch. And with Fergus,
oh,
he's like, son of my name and of my heart. I'm like, oh, bawling.
I know, it's such a, it's I just think they do that, they, you know, they do it so lightly and rarely, yeah, but when they do it, just to remind you how important Fergus is to Jamie, I think he's, yeah, you know, is really good, because I think it is important. And I also think, you know, and I'm going to try not to make this whole episode about slagging Roger off, but you know, I think it's kind of shows that, you know, he doesn't just love you or be loyal to you because you are blood, you know, he deeply loves Fergus. And you know, I think just like you say, that little line, you know, so clearly demonstrating that.
Absolutely. And, like, you even see it with his own grandsire. He doesn't have any,
no,
you know, people, he loves people for who they are and not because of that, which is quite different to that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a really nice, really well done, just like introducing kind of like with the wedding, the whole community, and then kind of really easy coming in. We see him in his kilt again, which is quite exciting. Yeah. And then the whole kind of declaration to, I don't even know what they call it, whatever the pledge that they make. Is quite nice. And then they head off. He leaves Roger. He doesn't leave Roger yet. They all kind of head off then together, don't they?
It isn't until after they've been to the Browns that he sends Roger back to Fraser's Ridge. So they go out, you know. And I think, you know, I think one of the things that season 5 does well is that there's, like, you know, there are quite a lot of spinning plates, as it were, you know, there's a lot of multiple storylines going on, which in earlier seasons you don't really have. You have like usually one like straightforward narrative, and whereas with this you've got the kind of, you know, you've got the overarching you know, like historical story, like with the Regulators, but, you know, personalizing that with Jamie having to create a militia to go after Murta, and then but then you've also got the additional narrative of Bree still recovering from her trauma, and then kind of being re-traumatized when she realizes that
Bonnet
is still alive. And so you've got that as an additional story. And then you've got like Claire's, well, I think I've referred to it as, like, you know, Claire's MacGyver moments, where, you know, she's creating penicillin, you know, she's literally every medical professional under the sun, testing people's eyes, pulling teeth out, you know, you name it, she can do it. So you've got all that sort of going on. So I think that's one of the things that I think is quite clever about this. They do have these like multiple storylines going on at the same time. And do that really well. Because obviously they're juggling quite a lot of like main characters now.
Yeah.
Whereas in the early seasons, it was just Jamie and Claire, really.
Yeah. There's a whole load of stuff going on in there. And even to begin with, and they just introducing more and more, like the twins, those two brothers. And then And then suddenly, and then obviously Lizzie gets like a bigger part.
Exactly, yeah.
And then you know, it just keeps expanding. And then Jamie kind of going off and doing his own role, getting up to mischief as usual and getting himself nearly killed. Yeah, and then we are introduced then to this whole other clan of our clan. Would you say clan? Oh, their family, the Browns, which brings like a whole other side to things. But it's just like they just kind of like happen upon them, and then suddenly they're brought into their lives with a really lovely scene with them. Before that, when Claire and Jamie take the baby, and bring them to the Browns because she needs to be fed and. I just find that scene so moving with Jamie and Claire when he kind of takes her aside and is like, you know, we could raise a baby together for the first time. There's just, I don't know, there was just something really sad about it, like upsetting. Like, you know, he really does just have that real like hole or something that's missing that he's desperate to, like that he just missed out with her. And he's just so, I don't know, he's constantly trying to fill it in some way or prove himself in some way.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was a really lovely scene between the two of them. They just were so respectful of each other. And
yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think they do return to him and this kind of sense of missing, you know, of genuinely missing out on, you know, that time where they weren't together. And what he kind of lost and what he missed in a more intense way than they do with Claire.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I think it's very much this idea that he has missed out on something.
Yeah, so, yeah. You don't get that sense from her, like, at all.
No.
I mean, obviously she was the one to raise Bree, you know, and he also has, you know, I guess there's more trauma for him because he's always been the one left wondering, what does that child look like? And then the same with Willie. Like, yes, he got to be around him quite consistently until he was like 5 or 6, but then again, he was had to abandon him.
Yes.
You know, and he's always the one to push to leave.
Yeah.
And he pushed Claire to leave, and then he obviously left Willie. And so there's obviously a lot of trauma around that and guilt. And it seems to come up in these ways.
Yeah.
Either something he says or like this big gesture with like, let's take this baby and raise this baby by, you know, together. We'd have our chance finally. It was a really lovely intimate scene between the two of them. I just thought it was worth mentioning. It was really lovely.
And I think we've touched on this quite a lot with, and missing out on being a family and missing out on like nurturing his own children. I think it's really important to show that, you know, that does impact on men. And I always think, because he is the kind of most masculine alpha male of all the characters, to have him also be the one that holds kind of vulnerability and holds, sadness in relation to his you know missing out on more personal things. I just think that's really important to have in there and that they do really center it, like you say, in that scene that you know they give a lot of time to that. It's really good.
It was You're so right. It's such a good contrast, and it's what makes him so appealing as a character.
And I think as well, just sort of thinking about it as well, that the kind of juxtaposition between him and how he treats strangers, even, you know, like people who aren't his family, and I can't remember the character's name, the man who is the father of that baby. Well, no, he isn't the father of the baby, but is married to the woman whose baby it is.
Yes, yeah.
And how he obviously treats people terribly, is, you know, has these two young men as indentured servants, and obviously probably treated his wife and, by the sounds of it, previous wives really, really poorly. So to have that kind of scene come on the back of, you know, somebody who is quite clearly a horrible man, who was kind of the opposite of what Jamie is representing.
Yeah. And that he's like trying to give him a peaceful end, or
even then he's compassionate to somebody who, you know, most people wouldn't show compassion to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was always a bit of a random scene when they come across that house. I'd forgotten about it, and then they come across, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about this, because it's really on it. It's almost like a horror, like you're really on edge, the whole time.
Yeah, so scary.
I was just like, oh my god, what's going to pop out? What's happening now?
And it's really gross and icky as well. Like all the things that have happened to it is like horrible. So it is a kind of strange like break in the narrative. Yeah, because it's like almost like a little vignette, really, isn't it? It's really odd.
Brings in this character that they kind of like create a really strong relationship with, and then leaves again.
Yeah.
Because you're left wondering, like, oh, I wonder what's going on. And then it's like, no, it's gone.
Exactly.
Only thing that's left is this. Is the little baby that they also like doesn't carry on in the storyline. Yeah, so it was just it was always a bit random.
Yeah.
And then Jamie sends Roger home for being useless. Anyway, no, he's not. He's like, as Claire is putting a spin on it, as usual, he is, you know, leaving his most treasured possession in your capable hands.
That isn't true. We're trusting Claire and Bree to make sure that Roger doesn't fuck up again.
Yeah. It's like Jamie's going, if they encounter someone on the road, I wonder who's going to get them out of that situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably Claire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the whole stuff with the Bransons, I mean, there's so much to pick apart in there. There's like whole, you know, we're introduced to real alpha patriarchs a really patriarchal structure, so that even the women sort of feed into that, you know, that the daughter has, you know, or niece or whatever she is, has disgraced herself because, you know, she's slept with somebody. And yeah, so it's just such a patriarchal clan, family, village, whatever you want to call it, in like juxtaposition to Fraser's Ridge, obviously. And you've got, you know, lots of stuff going on, lots of complexity, but also I just think there's something so weird about like Roger almost like not getting the seriousness of it all. So like, you know, cracking up on the whiskey, just fucking singing all the time. Just make that stop, somebody. And then what's the other thing that he does that I just went, oh yeah, then when Jamie arrives, just like quoting the origins of words. And are we supposed to think that he's just kind of a bit out of his depth, that he's I know he's out of time and he doesn't like get the culture of that, but he genuinely comes across as like a blithering idiot in this whole segment.
Yeah, I mean, you are kind of there going like, what does he think Jamie's gonna say?
Or, yeah,
like, because you do feel like, because he does mention, he's like, clearly I haven't won your father's approval. He goes on and on about it. It's like, all right, stop whinging about it and just kind of like do something about it. Like maybe like get down on your knees and beg and apologize. Use the word sorry, that you clearly don't know that word. No, instead I'm just going to recite like some, I don't know, patronizing random sentences without being any way helpful.
Yeah, it's all just really strange. Really, really strange.
Agreed. It is. And then he kind of like heads back, and we're kind of rid of him for a while, until I'm thinking like the next thing is a locust, but maybe I'm missing something. Is that because that's when Jamie's away with he's like, you know, off with that lieutenant or whatever.
Yeah I think you might be right, but Claire's not there with them either, is she? It's just him and Bree. And I think, I suppose, before we come on to the locus, and maybe, you know, try not to just focus on how much we hate Roger. but I think the thing that's in the very first episode of this series, and I suppose feeds into, you know, is Roger's sort of certainty that they're going to go back to the future.
Yes, I forgot, yeah.
And just that kind of assumption that that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And I kind of wonder if that's kind of why he's so half-assed with everything, because he's just like, well, I'm not going to be here, so why do I need to try?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he does say that. He says it quite, I think he says it at their wedding, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he does. He says it at their wedding. And then he said, and then I think he says it again. And I think that's when sort of Bree is like not agreeing with him. And I suppose that's one of the reasons why I find them as a relationship really unconvincing, because they just don't seem to communicate.
No, at all. It's really infuriating, and it comes. I think it's before the locust when he confronts her about the diamond that he finds the
jewel, doesn't he?
The jewel.
I think it might be.
Yeah, I think it's before that, and like even that is just like, I mean, we're now like going into like what do we hate and. Kind of territory, but it does kind of follow the timeline. That really struck a nerve with me.
Yeah.
Was just that whole confrontation.
I think one of us wrote in our notes about him being a narcissist, but just feel like, yeah, he doesn't really seem to have any compassion or empathy.
No.
For Bree, he doesn't seem to understand her perspective.
No, not at all. Like, no understanding.
No.
Like, maybe he can't understand it. He doesn't even come out of it and go, I can't get it. I don't get it, but I love you, so can you try and explain it to me?
Yes. Or,
like, there's just, like, and because we've seen that with Jamie and Claire, like in various scenarios, and where he's, you know, he's just like, it's another time and whatever, but he always tries to understand.
Yeah.
But it's like they're from the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
She's just had a horrendous, harassment, abusive thing happen to her. And he's going on about his fucking fragile ego.
Yeah.
And also being initially, just when she does come into the room, like really aggressive and confrontational.
Yeah.
Straight off the bat, like not even, like that's how he goes into the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without any kind of like, me just like my mind might be getting away with myself, but yeah, let me
exactly.
Just kind of hear her thoughts.
Yeah.
And also like what an incredibly brave thing to do. To confront the man who raped her, and not even ask her. Like,
I just think he's a really shallow person, and I mean, I don't know how their relationship plays out in the books, but for me, how it plays out is that he doesn't seem to learn and evolve.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that, you know, we see that with Jamie and Claire's relationship, that kind of learning and an evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't seem to happen. Roger is so certain of himself, but he's also got such a tiny, fragile ego that it's kind of the worst combination to have.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a really awful scene. I just think at no point does he ever acknowledge her trauma or her what a terrible experience she's been through and how stressful that's been. That never ever happens.
Never. No. Yeah. Even Claire's like, you know, what seems to be unlimited tolerance.
Yeah.
That she has for him when she meets him, like, you know, he slept out under the stars or whatever for the night because he's so childish.
Yeah, exactly.
And then woe is me, I'm going to sleep outside, whatever. And then yeah, Claire kind of stumbles upon him, and even she's just like being really understanding. And I'm as an audience member, I'm just like, no.
Yeah, same here. Same here.
Nothing to say to you. Yeah, and I think then we, during that time, it is just Claire, I think, on the ridge, and Jamie's not there because he's gone into town, isn't he?
And then I think then, you know, then obviously that's when the locus happened, because they're at the wedding.
Oh, yes, that's it. And they're on to the wedding.
You know, so there's a lot going on at that wedding whilst, you know, Roger saves everybody with his locus plan.
Yeah.
But like the like Jocasta's wedding, I mean, you know, obviously, I think one of the things that I thought was really good was the kind of flashback to Jocasta and her daughter being killed.
Yeah.
And the sort of insight that gives to her motivation and to her sort of response to murder and choosing to marry, you know, somebody who she obviously doesn't love or, you know, care about. But yeah, I thought that was really well done. Like that sort of kind of, you know, like that understanding of why she's as tough as she is, I think was really good.
Really traumatic.
Yeah. And just, you know, just kind of getting that insight and understanding, and just the kind of, you know, how just her, I just think her and Murta are great. And we just don't get enough of them.
No, and that scene, oh my God, like it really is so heartbreaking, especially for like a new love that we haven't really seen much of. You are, as an audience, you are desperate for them to like make it work. And you are, your heart is breaking with theirs. She is so good.
Yeah, she is.
I thought she just carried it so well, that like that really deep trauma from losing her daughter, and then and the heart, and then, like when he walks out of the room and she just is like silent, and then she just breaks down. It's so upsetting.
Yeah,
she's so good.
Yeah, she is. She's great.
She's so good. Yeah, just so strong, and like, yeah, like absolutely, like really articulated it perfectly with like this giving us an insight into why she is so strong. It was like that, you know, that really short scene,
this, you know, like wall around herself to protect herself.
Because I forgot we had seen them in the tent at the wedding.
Yeah.
When he turns up. That I forgot about that. Yeah, we do see them together once more.
Yeah. But it's really good. And I think the wedding, there's lots going on there. You know, we kind of, you know, we get back on the trail of Bonnet with Jamie and Claire, but then that causes like one of their, you know, usual, you know, fireworks and explosions arguments.
That wily guy.
Yeah, that weird guy.
Yeah, so random. Because he comes into it and it's like he knows Claire.
Well, he's in it very, very briefly at the beginning of season 4 when they're selling the necklace, and he's sat either next to her at dinner or something like that, but he's in that scene, but only very briefly. You don't, you know, you're sort of shown him as a kind of a bit of a foppish fool of a character, but then, you know, to come back in as more central in this.
He brings out there's so much drama. It's like you've got like the colonel or whatever, or what's his name, the governor.
Yes.
And then you've got like Claire and the governor's wife going off, and then the whole thing with Wiley. And I just think the Wiley character is so interesting because it brings out real comedic scenes from him and Claire. Yes. But then equally, it brings out a side of Jamie that, like, we kind of, like, rarely get a glimpse of, but it's quite entertaining, like, what the way he reacts.
Yeah.
To, you know, to anything threatening his wife, but in these contexts, he is quite entertaining. But it is like up and down. It's like heartbreaking with Jocasta and Mirta, and then it's, you know, you're just like, your heart is broken, and then it goes into being really entertaining when Wiley comes into it. You're just like, oh, he's awful.
Yeah.
And then it goes into and then this Jamie and Claire and the rings is really, really interesting, I found. Yeah. And I hadn't thought so much about it as I had.
No, I don't think I had really. And I think you still, and again, maybe in the books you do, but you don't get the explanation of why she keeps both rings on. And I don't think, you know, and to some degree, why should she have to explain herself to keep them both on? But I think there is something in that. And what I always like is when they have their kind of big flare-up arguments, it's always because of like some kind of unspoken thing or an unspoken resentment. And like, obviously, Jamie has been harbouring his feelings about her keeping both rings on.
Mm.
And then obviously when they have their kind of, and his line about, well, you're still just a woman, are always because of kind of when they're not been honest with each other.
Yeah.
And so it's like a real, like, all this pent up emotion.
Yeah.
But it always ends up being sadomasochistic sex.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not so much sadomasochism, but like some, like, I use that very light sadomasochism. but also like a domination thing. I just think it's really interesting. And they're really good at those scenes. Like, you really believe. So, yeah.
Like, she's so angry. Like, she's so angry with him, and he's just like, it's so entertaining at start because he's just so pissed, like he's hammered.
Yeah.
And so he's barely, you know, she's like, you're drunk, and then tries to walk out and then says something he knows he shouldn't say.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You can just tell
it's a provocation.
Oh, completely. You know, he knows exactly how to wind her up.
Yeah.
And does that. And then probably gets what he wants. It's almost like he wants her to hit him.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So he's like absolutely delighted. And then he's like, right, now I'm massively turned on and let's do this.
I just think it's really interesting. And I think when I've only read the first two books, I can't remember if you as well, but the reason why I like Jamie in the TV show over Jamie in the books is that I don't think they get that. Sorry, Diana Gabaldon. I don't think she gets it quite right. Like, because I think it's a razor's edge fine line to show like mutual, like, domination and sadomasochistic type relationships. It's really complicated to show it as an equal relationship, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And in the book, I think it leans a little bit too much to Jamie being dominant and Claire being a bit passive. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think in the TV show, I think they get it really perfect. Like, the balance is really right. In terms of the power balance of, like, the sort of the permissions of, you know, I'm allowing this to happen, sort of, you know, from both perspectives.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that I always feel is like they do those scenes really well in the TV show.
That's really well summarized. That's so true. And like, and because you can even just that scene with, you know, when he's asking for the rings and she, he's only asking for for Frank's ring. And then she said, well, if you're going to take that, you may as well take this too.
Yeah.
And just storms off. And like you can, so he's coming. So first of all, you can just tell he's like desperately trying to do something right.
Yeah.
But feels horribly guilty. And he's almost using that guilt as fuel to be like, do something to me.
Yeah.
That, you know, to make yourself feel better. And she's just like, yeah, fine. And just like, and they do it so well. It's so good. That and that sex scene is just great. It's really good. And it's kind of what we've been waiting for. And it was, I remember at the time, like the first time seeing it was a surprise, because we were like, it's almost like, when are we going to get that fierce passion? Like, where is that opening for that fierce passion again?
Yeah.
And it was really good.
Definitely. But I think there's you know, there's a lot going on in there.
Yeah, whilst the other two are at home trying to rescue the clan from the locusts.
Yeah.
And Roger's still moaning. I thought I'd only have to fix a few fences. God,
I know that I don't think Roger's ever going to be able to do anything to make us like him. I mean, we started a podcast after watching 6 seasons and we hadn't liked him, and the rewatching hasn't helped. But I just think even, you know, I know it's meant to be a joke, but I just do think he's just quite a narcissistic character. But I think I'll try and, you know, not just talk about how much I can't stand Roger, but I think one of the things that I really like about this first part of the season, and I suppose this kind of moves on to talking about feminist themes a little bit, is Marcelly and like Claire's sort of recognizing her potential and sort of mentoring her, and you know, empowering her to become her sort of assistant apprentice, and you know, just really, you know she's like, she said, I think at one point, like when Claire finally gets the right mold for penicillin, and she's like, you've done it, and I kind of think, no, Claire, you should be saying we've done it, because you know, Marcelly's been part of that, you know, I like how she, you know, her sort of curiosity is the thing that drives her, and that takes her past kind of the norms of the time. So like when Claire's done the autopsy, she reveals it, and she's like, are you a witch? You don't do her. Her curiosity kind of pushes her past that, and she's like, and the same with the penicillin. And I just think Marcelly's kind of journey in this half of the season is really, really great. Really great. I just think she's a great character anyway.
Yeah.
But I just think, and you know, really comes into her own in this season.
And it's just really nice to see the two of them work alongside each other on screen really well, and as characters really well.
Yes.
It's really nice to see that dynamic played out a bit more.
Yeah. And Lauren Lyle is such a good actor.
Yeah, she's great.
So, you know, the two of them together, who are both strong actors, it really lifts a scene when they're both in it.
Yeah. And you kind of see, you can see Claire's frustration, because she's, you know, when she's out with all the other women doing like, making the candles and doing all the dyeing of the clothes and stuff, and they're talking about all this, like, you know, nonsense medicine that they've heard. And, you know, you see Claire's really desperately trying to hold back. Which we talked a lot about in the last, in the International Women's Day special. But, you know, she appropriately doesn't say more than she should. And it's almost like she needs that additional person in the room.
I think so. I think she needs a peer, doesn't she? And I think in Marcelly she has that. I think
for sure.
I just really think they're relationship is really brilliant, and I really like that sort of evolution that Marcelly goes on.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she is. She's
great. It's always finished every time we talk about them, but I always just wish we'd see more of Marcelly and Fergus.
I agree. I just don't think there's enough Fergus and Marcelly, and as we've said before, there's too much Roger and Bree.
And I think we've touched on a lot of themes there. We've touched on a lot of feminist themes as well throughout the kind of summary of the whole first part of season 5. Do you want to talk about any fashion themes? Or do you want to, is there anything else?
No, I think we've covered, I think a big feminist theme for me is, and you know, it's come up so much in all of the seasons, but again, in this, like, how women are kind of, I'm going to use the word victims, but I don't mean that. I mean, kind of, you know, are kind of have a lot less agency.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, things happen to them because of men's behavior or decisions. So, you know, if you think Jocasta and her daughters, what happened to them was because of her husband, Hector. You know, the Browns, you know, Bree, as a result of, you know, Roger and Bonnet. And even, like, I was thinking, like, I think at some point, like, she says, like, she, even, like, the governor's wife, because she has to go where he goes. And that's out, you know, that's out of her control. And it's just like this, like, sort of women having no agency and no control over their own lives. And like Claire being the catalyst for that changing, or trying to make that change. And like, even like when she writes the, like the doctor.
The pamphlet.
The pamphlets, you know, that's what she's trying to do. She's, to some degree, she's trying to give women some control and some agency over their own lives. And I think that's a big theme that comes through this.
That women really lack that.
Claire is a big, a big agent for like disrupting that. And obviously we'll come on to that more when we talk about the second half of this season.
Yeah, because that's almost the start, and it's going to build now over this season.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we move on. That's so true.
But yeah, I mean, and let's talk about fashion, because I think there's a lot of fashion things, both good and bad fashion. I'm going to start with goodbye to Jamie's fringe.
Hello, bad wig. I'd take
the bad wig over that fringe, though.
Even the colour is different. I just can't get down with it.
So that was my first fashion observation. Is it fashion? I don't know. A fringe is a fashion choice, as far as I'm concerned, as a woman with
absolutely
a fringe. And for our American listeners, bangs. Jamie's bangs. But fringe sounds better. Why do you call them bangs? It's so weird. No offense. I think, you know, the wedding, so one thing that I really noticed was I just thought Claire's dress was, and her whole look was just really dull.
Yeah, agree.
I hated her hair, and her dress is so, I mean, it's like navy blue or something like that. It's so dull and blech.
So dull. So dull. When you think of like the fiery colours she's used before, and
no,
it's just like, oh, it's horrible. It's really disappointing.
Yeah, really disappointing. But then I think you really liked Bree's wedding dress.
Yeah, I wasn't mad about the style of it, but I just thought the attention to detail on the dress was really stunning. It was just, you know, you could see there was a lot of effort gone into it. There was so much small detail. But I did like her hair and makeup and her jewelry on the wedding day, but wasn't mad about the dress. But like, you could tell there was a lot of work gone into it.
Yeah, and, I mean, the embroidery kind of made me think about Claire. I mean, Claire's dress was epic. Her wedding dress with the I just saw the like the leaves around the bottom of the dress. So the kind of embroidery on Bree's dress made me think like it was almost a little bit of a callback to Claire's, but it's not as good.
No, it's not as stylish. It was just a lot of detail. But I really liked a lot more of the kind of casual outfits. And one of those was in episode 3 when Bree is saying goodbye to Claire. She wears this. Oh, I just loved the outfit, and I actually rewinded this part like several times. But she wears this gorgeous wide sleeved cotton shirt, with a knitted shawl around the top, like that we see on both Claire and Bree. And then she wears this really thick, layered navy skirt, and it's really clear that it's like this navy. You catch it in the sun, and high waisted. And then she wears like a green leather belt that has a satchel kind of hanging down. Mm. And all the colours, like that kind of that deep, the greens and the real beautiful blues of the navy against her red hair. She just looks amazing. I loved it. I really liked it. It really struck me.
Yeah.
This time when I was kind of, especially when you're paying a bit more attention to detail. But yeah, that was in episode 3 with Bree. And then at the kind of like a similar casual kind of outfit from Claire when she bumps into Roger that morning when he's slept out like a douche, and she's out gathering herbs. She wears this double-breasted blue linen shirt.
Oh yeah, that's great.
And a dark skirt, yeah, with a leather belt. And I just thought she looked so youthful, and it was really practical, but also just super stylish, which is what Claire just pulls off like constantly.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, with all the kind of formality of the weddings, both of which she wears, you know, she's dressed in quite weak dresses. I just didn't like either of them, at Jocasta's as well. Seeing her in that kind of the comfort of those, but also really practical and stylish, I really like those.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, and I think we've mentioned this before, but I think that what I'm going to refer to as party clothes, as opposed to kind of their practical everyday clothes when they're in America, are just not as good.
No,
never. I don't know whether the costume department and the wardrobe department had just exhausted themselves by doing all the Paris fashion. They're just not as good. Whereas the like you said, the practical everyday clothes are great.
Yeah, really good. And they both kind of suit those styles, both Bree and Claire quite well.
Yeah,
I just don't like the hair they give Claire when she's the formal in America, that formal hairstyle.
It
ages her so much.
I mean, and we are supposed to, I mean, how old is she supposed to be at this point? She's like older than me, I think, isn't she?
Yeah, I know. She's like in her late mid-50s.
I just hate it. I hate it.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I'm with you. I'm against it. Stop sending Claire to parties in America and giving her hair.
You mentioned her 60s outfit, or her suit, sorry, her 60s suit.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was, because, I mean, obviously we've historically not loved some of her 60s clothes.
No.
But I thought the where we're having the flashback forward, it's the suit where she's walking through the park with Bree. I just think that's really nice, really nice suit. And her eye makeup, I always think, is really good. 60s eye makeup is really good.
Yeah, agreed.
But equally quite a few that we don't like as well.
Yeah. I think compared to the last couple of episodes of the pod, we didn't really have a lot to talk about, but I think we've kind of
because I think we went through a very fallow period for fashion.
We were reaching
in the past couple of seasons. Yeah, we were like in a belt here and there.
A scarf.
Yeah, exactly. Just be thankful that I'm not talking about glassware anymore. I do miss the glassware, though. I did like that when they were in Scotland. Boiled my blood was when Bree tells him that Bonnet is alive and that she knows Bonnet is alive. I feel that he manipulates that situation to get what he wants, which is, you know, his solution is to suggest that they go back through the stones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just think you're not being there for her. You're just using this to get what you want, which is to go back. And that really annoyed me. I just think that's so manipulative.
Yeah.
And yet again, him lacking empathy for her.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. And there's so much of that happening. Like I talked already about, like when he confronts her about the diamond, it must be in Sam Heughan's contract or something where he's like, I am not growing my nails out. End of.
And you wouldn't have, I mean, obviously I don't know how people in the 18th century would have filed their nails, but I just don't think people who, that's the whole point. I'm a gardener, so I, little insight into my life, listeners, I have an allotment. American listeners, you're just going to have to Google what an allotment is. So I keep my nails really sharp because I don't want dirt, and it's not practical to have long nails. So I think people in the 18th century would have had short nails.
Really? I think they'd have been vile.
I don't think they'd have been long. I think they'd have been disgusting and filthy, because nobody wouldn't have known what. I mean, they would literally be just dropping down dead of dysentery every 5 minutes, because their hygiene levels would have been so poor. But I do think, but obviously, Jamie has learned about hygiene from Claire, hasn't he?
Yeah, but clearly Sam Heughan gets regular manicures because his hands are delicious. Like, you know. As well as his chest, his hands are so attractive.
Hands are delicious. That could be like a band name. Sam Heughan's hands are delicious. There's another sideline project for him, isn't it? He's like, he's done whiskey, he's done books, he's done tequila. He needs to do some good hand cream.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Or a manicure kit or something.
Winner.
And it could just be called Sam Heughan's hands are delicious.
I'd buy it.
Get in touch, Sam, if you want our idea. We'll give you the copyright for a very small amount.
Oh, yeah, I would. Oh, my God, that would be amazing. Just never. I mean, you see him, like, dirty or, like, you know, when he's in the prison, you can see that he's all, like, his hands are just filthy, but his nails are always short. And Roger's nails are...
I don't like no vomit, nails on men.
Vomit-inducing. I can't... So no, that was...
even you just talking about it is starting to make me feel a bit sick.
Yeah,
I can't think about. I don't like men with long nails. I don't like it.
I just don't.
It's the reason why I only fancied drummers and I didn't fancy guitarists, because I do not like the long nails.
Oh yeah, that's such a good point. And it was it just came up. One of the first things I saw was like, vom. We already talked about the singing, Roger.
But I'm just going to say it again: make it stop.
Make it stop. It's unbearable. And I don't think it
does. It happens it felt like every 10 minutes.
Mm.
It was too much singing.
Yeah, it's really irritating. Now I mentioned I had thought Mr. Brown was Irish, but you were saying that maybe he's Cornish,
one of them distinctly sounds like they're from the southwest of England, and then I'm fairly sure at some point they mention Cornwall, then really made me doubt whether you recognise an Irish accent or not anymore.
I'm just incapable now.
You've been embedded in England so long, you don't know what an Irish accent is.
I'm too embedded, and now I'm in the southwest as well.
Exactly.
I'm too close to Cornwall.
They're just blurring together.
Because I wrote, and then I haven't listened to him since. So I was like, oh my God, is he Irish? Or,
because then
oh
I was like, I thought it was Cornish. I think the actor is Irish. who plays Brown. I think he is Irish, but I think they're supposed to be Cornish.
Okay, but there's still an Irish element then. But I think, yeah, we did have our hate list wasn't as long as last time.
No,
I feel like we kind of spread it out a bit better as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the previous episode, I think that's all it was. It was just nearly the whole episode was just talking about how much we hate Roger.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it's always going to be there.
Yeah,
it's
could have gone on for longer.
The modus operandi of this podcast.
Yeah, to be fair.
I mean, always.
To be fair, it is.
I literally could have spent 15 minutes talking about how bad the singing was. I think there's a beginning of a season and a build, you know, like five seasons in now. It's really good because obviously it's difficult, I think, after this long of creating that characters are still developing and evolving. But I do think that happens with this show, and you know, the fact that Myrta has that journey through the whole of it is really great. But obviously, where we leave this half a season is like with that sort of sense of foreboding of what's coming.
Yeah, definitely. Because we go into, so the next half that we talk about, we're going into the Ballad of Roger Mac and then finishing with the last episode, Never My Love. So, yeah, we've got a few more to get through for the next one, but that's where we're at.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to, anyone is joining in with us and... Yeah, like you say, there is definitely a sense of, you know, we're kind of like on edge with what's to come.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it because I really enjoy these first six. Yeah, I really did enjoy that. And I'm looking forward to this next one. There is a lot. I remember there is a lot in it. All right.
Yeah, huge amounts.
Yeah.
Huge amounts.
Huge. So, yeah. Won't be long coming up on us. But like we mentioned at the start, though, if there is anything anyone wants to email in or DM us on Instagram as our main kind of social media engagement with listeners, please do. And we'll chat about it here, or we can just engage with you directly. But, you know, we'd love to hear what everyone thinks.
Yeah.
Which is really important.
And although our listenership is really growing, which is very exciting, what would be brilliant is if you are listening, if you can go on to whichever platform you listen on, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and rate us, follow us, write a little nice, kind review about us, because then more people can find the pod and listen and join in. That would be brilliant, because so far we've just got, I think, on Apple, only like 5 or 6 ratings.
Yes, so, yeah. So,
you know, we want to get into the top 10 of Outlander podcasts.
Yeah, because you'll be listening now on your phone, so just go there and rate us.
Just go on and literally click on 5 stars, and then if you've got a bit more time, write a little review.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Brilliant. Yeah. We'll be eternally grateful.
So we'll see you next for episode 13 is next, I think. So have a good week, everyone.